you get you one?
No, I got one. I got half of one. That'll do. Hi. Oh, God. I got down low. I was like right up my nose. Hi, I'm Lulu, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, my goodness. And I'm sober today by the grace of God, by the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as outlined in the first 164 pages of that book, and good sponsorship. That's what's really important. And thank you, Mark, for asking me. Lancaster is like 10 miles beyond any lengths, I think. Like just. And thank you. Oh, I'm just going to cry. I just love you so much. And you did such a great job. You killed it. And Shelby came into my life via Scott, who I've known for a long time. Long time. And I'm just grateful to be here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's funny, I was just putting on some lipstick, and I was like, I want to at least look like a respectable member of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you know. Because, you know, like you were saying, like, I want you to know that Alcoholics Anonymous has made this, right? I'm standing here, you know, in drag, and, you know. And if you know me, it's not my jam. And Alcoholics Anonymous has made a lady out of me, and I'm just grateful. I'm just really grateful. I had a migraine yesterday. I have migraines, and I had a migraine yesterday and half of today, which kind of messes with my brain. And it just kind of makes me a little more mellow. And Shelby, after dinner, she goes, do you need to go get a coffee or something? And I was like, oh, no, we don't need to add coffee to this. This is terrible. So you're going to get what I got today. And I will tell you, I'm originally from Chicago. Yeah, right? Go ahead, diss the Bears. Go ahead. And I used to talk like I was from Chicago, right? And I moved to California. And you guys made fun of me, so I stopped talking like I'm from Chicago, right? because I just want to fit in with you, right? And I hear people in AA say all the time that they didn't feel like they fit in growing up. And I didn't fit in with you. We moved to Bel Air, California. I know that sounds super bougie. It's not. We were like the Bel Air Hillbillies. Nothing cool about that. And it was 1976, right? And you guys were so cool. It was the surfer and the skater era, which is back. Makes me so happy. And you guys were just so cool in California, right? You were wearing OP shorts and Hang Ten socks. Remember those? And Senor Lopez ponchos and Vans. And I just had some plaid polyester pants that came up to my neck, you know, and I was just, I'm always this short of being cool, right? I sent my mom to the mall to get me some Vans, and my mom came home with the Kinney version of Vans. The old people laugh. Young people don't even know what Kinney is anymore. It's not, they don't even pay less anymore, like Walmart Vans, like fake Vans, right? And I didn't have the mom who was like, oh, I'm so sorry I got you the wrong Vans. You never have to wear those again. My mom made me wear those Vans every single day. And you guys made fun of me, right? And so I don't fit in with you. And I'm smart, but I don't want to really fit in with the smart kids. And I'm not pretty, so I don't fit in with the popular girls. And I'm not athletic, so I don't fit in with the jocks. But I found the stoners took me without an application. Yeah. Any stoners here? Ooh, I love Lancaster. Lots of stoners. You can always tell the stoners because they move real slow, right? Yeah. 30 years later. Ooh. Mike, because what happened is we would sit down and we smoked a little weed, and it didn't matter that I was wearing fake Vans anymore. And more importantly, that it didn't matter to you, it didn't matter to me. And I believe this is because alcohol and drugs fix something in me I don't believe they fix in the normal person. I remember when I came to AA, and you guys would read, alcoholics drink primarily because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And I thought, duh. Like, these people need to read that in a meeting? That seems kind of silly, you know? Not so smart. But what I've learned since I've been here is I believe that I have a different effect produced by alcohol. And the reason I believe that is because I love to hang out around non-alcoholics. They are fascinating people, aren't they? Oh, God, I love them. Because, like, if you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. We spend a lot of time around each other, right? And what you hear here is the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. It gets worse, right? And so we get used to that. We think everybody's like that, right? You hear someone at a meeting go, you know, I sold my car for dope. And someone else is like, I sold my house for dope. Somebody's like, I sold my kid for dope, you know? And I'm like, ah, yeah, right? We laugh, right? They don't laugh in the lunchroom at work, let me tell you. And so I'm fascinated by non-alcoholics. My favorite one is my brother. Oh, I love my brother. He's hilarious, right? Because he is not an alcoholic. He's the weirdest dude that I know. He's been married to his wife for 25 years. I've been married 4 times. I can't get to 25 years. He's a school teacher in Arizona. He's worked for the same school. He's like the same job, same. He's so just normal. I call him the beige guy because I'm Technicolor and he is super beige, right? And I mean, like, he wears the beige guy uniform, which is a mint green polo shirt tucked into his khaki pants with a lovely leather belt and Crocs, right? No, I mean, like, we were at the holidays a bunch of years ago, and I looked across the room at him, and I'm like, I don't know how we came out of the same womb, and my mom yelled from the kitchen, he's mine, you were switched at the hospital at birth. Right? He's just the most normal guy you've ever met in your life, and he has a wine cellar in his house, which means he keeps wine for, like, 10 years. Mm-hmm. Right? I can't keep mouthwash in my house. Like, who's this dude, right? And we were at the Olive Garden not too long ago, which is the favorite restaurant of beige guys everywhere. And let's go to the Olive Garden again, okay? Delicious. And and we're at the Olive Garden, and he and his wife are drinking. I'm obsessed with their drinking. And so I ask him, I go, what's going on, dude? You're not drinking. And he said, oh, me and the wife, we're on Weight Watchers, and it's too many points. I have a seizure over that. That's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, I'm figuring out how many points are in the alcohol, and I'm skipping food, and then we're just throwing Weight Watchers out the window. So I love to ask my brother what happens when he drinks, because it fascinates me, right? And my brother says this. He says, well, you know, I have a glass of wine, and I start to feel it. Good. Good plan. Keep going. Keep going. He says, then I have a second glass of wine, and I start to feel out of control. So I stop. Yeah, right? That's just a weird... I have my second drink, and I'm starting to feel in control. Right? I have my second drink, right? And even though I know I can't drink and drive anymore, and I've given away my keys, I have my second drink and I'm taking back my keys because I'm sure I can drive my car, maybe an 18-wheeler. Depends on what you got, right? I have a different effect produced by alcohol. And what I can tell you is I chase that into the gates of insanity and death, right? And by the time I'm 17 years old, I stop going to school because school starts really early in the morning. Not a fan. And if you don't go to school in my house, you can't live in my house, right? So my parents throw me out, and that's fine. I don't need you. And by the time I'm 21 years old, I have the outside manifestations of a drug addiction. In those days, we're snorting a lot of cocaine. It was not cool to smoke it yet. And my nose has been cauterized a bunch of times. My gums are worn away. Like, I'm rewiring the vacuum cleaner at 3 o'clock in the morning. I obviously have a drug problem, right? And I'm 21 years old. Life becomes too much to bear. So I take 64 sleeping pills, wash it down with a bottle of Kahlua, and I put on a long white gown to die. Any other drama queens in here? Drama queens? Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, you're going to feel terrible when you find my dead body. Luckily or unluckily, I'm a drunk dialer, right? And I called my mom, and my mom's a therapist. And there's just nothing worse than being put on a 72-hour hold in a lockdown psych ward put there by your Jewish mother. It's just embarrassing in front of the other psych ward patients. That's where I date. I mean, come on. And in that psych ward, I told them I was depressed. I couldn't get out of bed. I didn't tell them about the drugs. So I didn't tell them about the drinking. They sent me to one meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I remember is a bunch of toothless old guys, probably about the age that I am now. And these guys in this meeting talked about how they had lost their family due to drinking, and they had lost their home due to drinking, and they had lost their job due to drinking. And I was 21 years old. I hadn't lost anything yet. I didn't have anything to lose, right? And so I know I'm not an alcoholic. Drugs are my problem. I'm not going to do drugs anymore. I got out of that psych ward with what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous calls self-knowledge, right? Drugs are my problem. I'm not going to do drugs anymore, and everything's going to be fine. In that psych ward, they gave me medication. I do love medication. I love medication. I love medication that says don't drink with this medication, right? You know it's going to be good if it's got a warning label. I date that way as well, yeah. And the warning label. Is that a gang tattoo on your forehead? That's so sexy. Love a warning label. And, you know, I got out of that psych ward, and I met a man. I've been married 4 times. That's a lot of my story. And he didn't do drugs, and that's perfect because I'm not doing drugs anymore. You know, we threw away my bong together, right? And we're going to live together and happily ever after. And this poor guy had no clue. And I'm trying to fix my insides by fixing my outsides. So we moved to Simi Valley, California, because drug addicts don't live in Simi Valley, California. And in those days they didn't. And we buy a house on a cul-de-sac, right? Because drug addicts don't live in a house on a cul-de-sac. Right, and I start driving a station wagon because drug addicts don't drive a station wagon, and I start listening to country music, right? Because drug addicts don't listen to country music, and nothing changes. Nothing changes, and I'm drinking and I'm taking pills, and one day, you know, we get married, and one day, we have my beautiful son, and I'm a terrible mother, right? I believe I'm a good mother, right? Because I put food in his stomach and clothes on his back, and I sit him in front of a television set, right? But I'm loaded and I'm not present. And that guy, one day, he looks at me and he says, you know, I'm not here for this, I'm gonna leave. Fine, I don't need you anyways. And I met a nice Al-Anon man who took care of me and my son for 1.5 years so we didn't die, and I'm super grateful. But one night I went out to the bar and I met him. Him, you know him, right? He drinks like me. He has a crystal meth problem, so he's sicker than me. It's okay, I'll fix him. Yeah. I knew I was in love. He was wearing his work uniform, and it had a patch with his name on it, so I could remember his name throughout my whole blackout. So that guy and I, we got married. We got married in our apartment because he was on house arrest. You've done that too? I know. Nothing goes better with a rented tuxedo than an ankle bracelet. And by this time, my son is 6 turning 7 years old, and he's baggage, and I'm dragging him from bar to bar and bad relationship to bad relationship and dope house to dope house because that's the best parenting skills I got, right? My parents have disowned me in an email because they're techno-savvy. And they said, we're not going to want you die, and we're not going to want you take our grandson with you. And my response is, don't need you anyways. I've lost my 3rd job that year. I've been hospitalized 4 times for drinking. And if you would have asked me if I was an alcoholic, I would have told you no. Right? I would have told you the problem was baby daddy. The problem was the job. The problem was my parents. The problem was definitely you. And I didn't come here to get sober. If you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care why you're here. I don't care if you're here for your parents. I don't care if you're here for a partner or the courts or anything else. When I got here, I heard people say that I needed to be here for me and all these things, that I don't believe that's what... The magic of Alcoholics Anonymous has worked on me despite me. I came to you kicking and screaming, like you were talking about getting an alimony check. Right? I don't care why you're here. Whatever gets you here, I belong here. I don't want to stop drinking, right? I just wanted the consequences of my drinking to stop. But I was backed into a corner one more time, and if you're new, I want to welcome you if you're backed into a corner one more time. I'm the girl who took all her drugs to treatment. I didn't really understand this whole thing. It says Alcoholics Anonymous on the book. I figured you weren't going to let me drink anymore. But the guy unpacked my bags at the rehab, pulled out a Ziploc bag with 15 prescriptions, and it was like, oh, what's this? I was like, oh, those are my medication. They are prescribed by a doctor. He said, you have a lot of doctors. I said, I have a lot of ailments. He said, some of them are in Puerto Rico. And he was great. He knew I was ready to run out the front door of this treatment center. And what he said was, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take them up front. And when you need them, you can come get them. And I thought, man, this place is awesome. And that night they brought in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys scare me to death, right? You're shiny, clean, happy, smiling, laughing. You want to hug me, right? And so I go running up to this front office, knock on the door. Nice guy unpacked my bags, nowhere to be found. Woman opens the door, what? I said, I need two Ativan, two Xanax, a Valium, a Vicodin, a Trazodone, a Wellbutrin, and a Prozac. Please, I'm having an anxiety attack. And she said, you can't have that here. And I said, no, you don't understand, right? Because that's the cry of the alcoholic, is you don't understand. And she said, yes, I do. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to hyperventilate, you're going to pass out on the floor, you're going to wake up, and you're going to be fine. Slammed the door in my face. She was absolutely right. I hated her so much. Right? I spent my first week in Alcoholics Anonymous. I watched your meetings from behind a sliding glass, like nurse's window in the treatment center. Because when I'm hyperventilating and passing out in your meetings, it's just super disruptive. When I spent my second week in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to sit in a chair by the door with my foot touching the outside wall so I wouldn't hyperventilate and pass out in your meetings. And that's what I brought you, right? But I was going to do some of what you did when I got here. I wasn't going to do all of what you did when I got here. I like meetings. Meetings had my three favorite C's: cookies, coffee, convicts. I love meetings. I say use it as a dating service. Odds are good, goods are odd. They told me to take commitments. I'd take commitments where I'd look cute and be the center of attention. I would jump up. I was your chip chick, your literature chick. I'm just not setting up your chairs and picking up your cigarette butts. They told me to work the steps. I'm not really a fan of action words in general. I'm not going to work at anything, really. And they told me to get a sponsor. I got a sponsor in name only because I'd talk to her. She'd tell me what to do. I'm horrible with authority figures, right? And I hung out in Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me not to get in a relationship my first year. I didn't. I got my first relationship at a year and a day. Yeah! Followed the rules, right? I worked step none. I got no God and no sponsor. But we're going to meetings, right? He's been out of jail for 8 days. We're in love. You know how the story ends, huh? We're going to be that old sober couple in the corner. You know, every clubhouse you go into, right, there's that old sober couple in the corner. I don't know how they got there, but we're going to go to meetings. That's what's going to happen. And in 9 months, he was loaded in my house. All the money was gone, and he was walking out my front door. And for me, this causes a problem because I have alcoholism. What I have at this point is a year and 9 months of completely untreated alcoholism. And my alcoholism demands treatment. It demands treatment with a spiritual solution as outlined in that book, or alcohol. So it was 8 days before my second sober birthday. That's 2 years without a drink or drug if you're counting. And I couldn't stop crying. I hadn't stopped crying. Standing in my shower crying. And I was going to buy a gun so I could blow my head off on my second AA birthday. That's the best that I got at 2 years without a drink. See, I thought when I came to you that if I stopped drinking, things were going to get better. But when I stopped drinking without a sufficient substitute, up here, things get worse. Much worse. And luckily, I trained my feet in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't trained my brain here yet. My feet took me out of that shower and took me to a meeting where some wonderful women grabbed me, women who cared more about my life than my feelings. And if you're new, I hope someone cares more about your life than your feelings. And they said, you do some of what we do here. You don't do all of what we do here, and you're dying of alcoholism. And on that day, I was desperate and willing. And if you're new, I wish you desperation and willingness, because if you're not, you won't do the things we do to stay here. And I would love to tell you that this is a story that from that day to this, I've done everything you asked me to do. I've been actively sponsored. I worked the steps, and now I walk through the fields every day with Bill, Bob, and Jesus. Scott's laughing too loud. That's not me, right? Because what I find here, first of all, that my willingness is completely dependent on my level of pain. So for me, my experience is I come here and I do some of what you asked me to do, and my life gets better, and then I back off a little, and then I got to try it my way, right? I have a little problem with self-righteousness. I think I'm right all the time. And so what happened for me is I got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous doing the things you asked me to do, and my life got better. I'll tell you that. I was doing everything you asked me to do. I only had one problem. You guys kept talking about God. I'm not really a fan, right? I come from a household that I had a punishing God. My mom was the kind of mom you'd bang your knee on the coffee table. My mom would yell from the other room, God punishes, right? And I don't want that dude to know where I live, right? So I'm not going to have your God, but I'm going to get busy in AA. And you guys taught me how to suit up and show up. I was actively sponsored. I started doing all the things. And my life got better. At 3.5 years sober, I got my son back, right? I lost custody of my son for 3.5 years, and when he came back to live with me, the people in AA put up a tent in my little dining room so that I could have a bedroom for my son, because I don't think of those things. And my life got bigger, and I'm 5 years sober, and the 10-minute speaker at my meeting, and I fall madly in love. We get married in a big AA wedding, 238 of our closest friends and family, and I'm driving a BMW, and we buy a house. And it looks so good on the outside. I'm only missing one thing. A belief and a dependence on. So what I'm doing is I'm hanging out in AA, and about 8.5 years sober. 8.5 years sober. And I started thinking. This is where Morgan Freeman's voice should come in and go, ooh, should not be thinking. Right? Because I have a thinking problem, not a drinking problem. Because if I have a drinking problem, I just stop drinking and there's no problem. I'm sure not driving a Lancaster on a Friday night, right? I have a thinking problem. I'm 8.5 years sober, and I started thinking. I wonder if these people in AA are doing all the stuff they say they're doing. Right? Like, rigorous honesty seems like a lot of effort. And it started really simply with illegally downloading music, because I think I'm entitled. And then I thought it was okay to cheat on my taxes. I mean, everybody cheats on their taxes, right? And then I thought it was okay to cheat on my husband, with a 24-year-old boy who had 18 months sober and no regard to his welfare whatsoever. And I was doing shady stuff in and out of these rooms. But I'm sober, right? I'm stark, raving sober. And the problem is I'm 8.5 years sober, and my first drug of choice is what you think of me. So I can't tell you. So I'm running around AA, and I'm your GSR, and I'm your secretary. And as my friend Ricky says, unfortunately, I was some people's sponsor. And I'm running around AA being busy in AA. And luckily, the woman who was my sponsor for 13 years came into my life, and she said, you're going to drink. And I was like, no. Don't you know who I think I am? She said, you're the prom queen of the leper colony. Now what? You're popular in AA, right? And she opened up that book and showed me where it said that if my motives didn't change and I continued to harm others, I was sure to drink. And I'm a believer. So I was 10 years sober. 10 years sober. And I was standing in a bar in Las Vegas, Nevada, a bar I had been to. And I had a thought. There's that thinking problem. Sudden thoughts, impulsive actions. And I thought, you know, if I weren't an alcoholic, I wouldn't have to live up to all this spiritual garbage. Which is a really scary thought for an alcoholic like me, because I was about to take a drink. And that woman had told me that everything I was doing was walking towards a drink or walking away from a drink. And not just in here with you, because I could be a spiritual beacon of light for an hour and a half, sit next to me on the 14 freeway. And I knew I was going to drink, and I called her and I said, I'm going to drink. What do I do? And she said, well, it's a program of principles, and you don't have any. The first one being honesty, and the second one being humility. right? And I found out when I got honest, humility soon took care of itself, right? Because when the people in AA found out I had cheated on the nicest guy in AA, the guy who founded my old home group, you guys were not nice to me, right? You'd walk up to me at meetings and go, and walk away from me, which was great, because you couldn't be my higher power for one more minute. It says in our literature that God could and would if he were sought. I have to go seek. It's another action word. Right? And see, it talks about in our book, no human power can relieve my suffering, right? And I'm looking for you. Here's the thing. When I got here, they said, oh, make the doorknob your higher power. Make the tree your higher power. Make the group your higher power. That's great in the beginning, sure. But that doorknob's going to break. Somebody's going to cut down your tree. And you are going to fail me. You're human. I wore the Scarlet Letter in Alcoholics Anonymous for about a year. People wouldn't even hold my hand during the Lord's Prayer. It was pretty cool. And I lost everything that came between me and God. I lost that marriage. I lost that house. I totaled my pretty BMW texting because I was so important I couldn't miss that text. And everything that came between me and God went away. And I ended up in a guest house in someone's backyard seeking God and having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. See, we say the a lot of times in the reading and it sounds like it's what I get. I get a God and I get to give it to somebody else. That's it. I was raised Jewish. I'm now practicing Buddhist. In LA, that makes me a Boo-Jew. Means I have an 11-step practice through prayer and meditation with a God of my own understanding that solves my problem. If you have your scorecards out, that's three husbands down. There's still one to go. I got one more husband. So I married another guy. He lived in another country. I thought that would be better. It wasn't better. I came along. And he lived in England. So I thought, I'll move to England, right? Just in case you're wondering, they are a glum lot. There is AA in England. Oh, my gosh. I didn't move somewhere cool like London. I moved, like, to the Oklahoma of England. And not even, like, Oklahoma City. I mean, like, Enid, Oklahoma. Like, cows and sheep and pubs, right? And I moved over there, and there was, like, I was used to AA in Los Angeles. My home group has 700 people in it, you know? And it was eight people, the same eight people in every meeting. No steps and traditions on the wall, no book in the room. And they were complaining about their day. And I thought, man, I've made a horrible mistake. There were no newcomers. And there were two women there when I got there. One woman had 20 years, one woman had 6 months. And within 6 months of my arrival, the one with 20 years was diagnosed with cancer and passed away. I thought, I'm going to die here. There's nobody to sponsor. There's nothing. I would call my sponsor back in LA crying. She said, just keep showing up and being the example of Alcoholics Anonymous that you know, right? And eventually one woman showed up. And another woman showed up. And another woman showed up. And in the time that I lived there, I got to sponsor 17 women and take them through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous the way I was taught, toe-to-toe, knee-to-knee, word-by-word. I still sponsor some of them today, and I believe that's the reason I was put there. I know you're going to be surprised. It wasn't for the dude. They never work out. I don't know. But I also know my God knows me, right? God could come down like Charlton Heston God, like robes and staff, right? Be like, ooh, I need you to go to the middle of England and do my work. And I would have been like, dude, I live in the valley, and I'm like super busy. I don't think I can squeeze it in. So he gave me a guy with a cute English accent, and boom. And in 2018, when that marriage ended, I came to move back to California. I wanted to live where I lived before in, like, the cool area of the valley. I lived in the NoHo Arts District, which is a misnomer. There's tons of hoes. And, no, I know. I lived there for many years. And it had gotten very expensive, and I couldn't afford to live there, and I got offered a guest house in Northridge, California. Northridge, like North, nobody knows North. In 1994 we had an earthquake. That's what everybody knows in North. There's a college, nobody goes there. That's it, right? Northridge. I called my sponsor. My sponsor told me to shut up and take the guest house and be grateful. I moved into this little 600 square foot guest house. God sent me a 5-pound chihuahua. I drive a Miata. God thinks I need miniature things. I'm not petite. I'm not sure what it's all about. You know, and I went about living my life in 2018 back in Los Angeles, and then 2020 came along. Anyone else have a weird 2020? Oh, kind of weird? Yeah? Oh, good. I'm so glad. I had a little extra weird with my 2020. On January 19th of 2020, I had a stroke. I know, right? They say it must have been really traumatic. I don't know. It was my brain. I don't remember any of it, or really the week before. They say get a good sponsor. They'll save your life. Mine did. She knew I was acting weird, which is important because I'm weird. And it's very time sensitive. You have 3 hours to get the shot that clears the clot out of your brain. So my sponsor and best friend got me to call 911. The paramedics came, realized I was having a stroke, and they took me to Northridge Hospital, which is a mile from my house and the only stroke center in the San Fernando Valley. Is it odd? Or is it God? They take me into that hospital. They diagnosed me with something called MRSA. I didn't know what MRSA was. I was busy having a stroke. And 10 days later, they let me out. A month later, I lost my job, pretty much my career. I didn't work for 14 months. And on March 13th of 2020, you guys were all locking down for COVID. And I got really sick with MRSA. I broke out in abscesses all over my body. I was septic. I almost died for the second time that year. I was in and out of emergency rooms, which were actually tents in the parking lot. They were treating me in hazmat suits because they didn't know what COVID looked like. And it was pretty darn crazy. So I thought that would be the perfect time to get in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Shelby remembers. With a guy who is 25 years old, 4 months sober, and 5 days out of prison. Thank you. Thank you so much. No, it was fine. I knew his mom from AA. By April, you guys were gone. You were little squares on a computer, and I was completely detached from Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't deal with the little Brady Bunch squares. By May, the MRSA attacked bones of my mouth. I needed major surgery to move bones from my mouth. And by June, that relationship ended in a hotel room in Las Vegas, Nevada, in violence. My ass was falling off. When I was new, right, the old-timers used to say, if your ass is falling off, pick it up and put it in a bag and take it to a meeting. Oh, I hate it. But you weren't there anymore. You were in these squares. And I didn't know what to do. And I was driving around town in my little Miata, and I would see trucks on the other side of the road. And I'd think, man, if that truck pulls over on this side of the road, I'm good, I'm done. Because I've lost everything that I think makes me me, right? I've lost my job, I've lost the dude, I've lost AA, it's all gone. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be here anymore, and I'm 20 years sober. And then I remembered there was a meeting in a park, a rogue, illegal meeting in a park. So I picked up my big book, and I picked up my camping chair, and I went out to that park every day at noon and 6. Because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking than intensive work with another alcoholic. And they were bringing these treatment center vans to the park because, you know, there was nowhere else to take them. And there was nobody out there to sponsor them. My sponsor said, because everybody with any sense or time was at home, you know, following the law. And I knew I was going to die of alcoholism before I died of anything else, right? And I was like crazy big book lady in the park. They get off these vans. I'm like, you want to go through the book? You want to work the steps? No, don't even tell the treatment center I'm your sponsor, right? Because that's my life raft, you know? And we got through it, man, through good sponsorship. I can tell you this. One day I was talking to my sponsor. I'm out in that park every day, and I was telling her that they were bringing food boxes out to the park. And my sponsor said, did you take a food box? And I was like, no. She said, do you have any food in your house? And I said, no. See, because I'm 20 years sober and I can't see myself and my ego is still so huge that I can't take a food box in front of you. To this day, I'm still actively sponsored. I have to have someone else look at me and tell me. I'll tell you a little bit about my beige brother. Oh, that guy. I hated my brother when I got sober. I don't know if any of you guys got... My brother's, like, good guy. He's, like, perfect. Ugh. And when I was 24 years old, my dad died. And my brother was not very helpful in cleaning up my dad's stuff. My dad was kind of a high-end hoarder. And when I was cleaning up my dad's stuff, my brother called me. He said, I want one thing of dad's. It's a Movado watch. I was like, cool. So I'm going through my dad's stuff. I find the Movado watch. I stick it in my pocket, and I never give it to my brother. Screw that guy. So I'm 10 years sober. My life is on fire in Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys are being mean to me after I cheated on that guy, right? So I'm calling my sponsor in tears every day. I went to the meeting and they were mean to me. They wouldn't hold my hand during the Lord's Prayer. My sponsor says, why don't you give your brother the watch? You're not listening to me. I didn't say anything about my brother or a watch. She said, why don't you give your brother the watch? And she hung up the phone. Day two, why don't you give your brother the watch? And hung up the phone. So after about a week of this, I don't know about you guys, I'll do anything to shut up my sponsor, right? I'm going to give my brother the watch, whatever, right? And I go and I have it fixed up and cleaned up and made nice. And I call my mom, and my brother's visiting. And I said, I'm going to pick up Josh. I'm going to take him to the airport. And my mother says, you're not going to kill him and hide the body, are you? Right? Because all my mom ever wanted was for us to have a relationship, right? And I told her, we are nothing alike. We will never be friends. Never, Mom. And so I picked up my brother, and I'm driving down the 405 freeway, and I did what you taught me to do. I said, I was wrong for what I did to you. What can I do to make it right? And I handed my brother the watch, and my brother opened the watch, and he started to cry. And he said, do you know what it was like to be your brother? And I said, no, why don't you tell me? And my brother said, you know, I was just a good kid doing the best I could do. And you were in the principal's office again. And you were in the hospital again. And you were in the back of a police car again. And Mom and Dad didn't even know I was alive. See, my brother's a good dude. My brother makes his house payment every month. He's got two kids going to college. That beige car, he pays for that every month. That guy, with, you know, he's a school teacher, and like he's been a school teacher for like 30 years now. And we're in Arizona at the grocery store, and people who were his students 30 years ago go, Mr. O! They love him. And with the flip of a switch, I could see that. And then I did what you guys taught me to do, right, was I don't say just that I was wrong. I amend the behavior. We started to make my brother the center of attention. My brother works in an inner city school, right, and he raises money. He coaches volleyball. So we raised money so that his girls could have uniforms, right. I started to build this relationship with my brother. And when I was living in England, he would come pick me up at the airport. We started to get along. And in 2019, they announced the football schedule, and I found out his Oakland Raiders were playing my Chicago Bears in London. My brother's never been anywhere. My brother's a responsible guy who pays his bills, right? My brother lives on a school, on two school teacher salaries. He's got a passport with no stamps in it. I've been all over the world, 29 countries. So I called up my brother and I said, I want to take you on a trip. And on September 29th of 2019, my brother and I got on an airplane, and we started out in Edinburgh, Scotland. We drove all the way through England. We ended up in London. We saw his team, Arsenal, play and went to Tottenham Stadium to watch the Bears play the Raiders. The Raiders won. I told him it was part of the amends. But what I can tell you is I learned on that trip, right, more importantly than the game, was my brother and I took this road trip, and it wasn't the fanciest road trip, but we laughed. We stayed up till 2 a.m. having a great time. My brother is exactly like me. My brother is my buddy. And why that becomes important today is because my 82-year-old mother, who I love more than anything in the world, has dementia. She lives 10 minutes from my brother, and we take care of my mom together. See, they say when you get here, don't leave before the miracle happens, right? If you would have told me the miracle was a road trip with my brother, I would have told you, no thank you, I'll pass. But that's my miracle. I got sober at a place called Radford Hall. Radford Hall, the hippie ladies of Radford Hall. The essential oil sniffing, crystal wearing hippie ladies of Radford Hall. And they'd be like, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to NLX to get it. Right? And I was like, no. And I had a pierced tongue. I rode my motorcycle, which I had just gotten out of the pawn shop. No. 23 and a half years later, I am now essential oil sniffing, crystal wearing. I'm not wearing tie-dye yet. I'm not that bad. Hippie lady. Because what these ladies were offering me was peace. A peace that I didn't even want when I got here, right? And now that I have it, I wouldn't sell it for $1 million. But if you ask me, I'll give it to you for free.